Before we get on the other questions, you said that we are having a hearing against or the Church of Scientology, and they are back in the office trying to figure out how to handle us. How do you think they may handle us?
Look for our button.
What should I be aware of? And what should my colleagues up in this
club? Well, I'll tell you, I sure wouldn't want to have any skeletons in my closet. I'll be very frank.
Now you tell me.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask them a question?
They're not of any value once they've been used.
If you got a phone call in the morning, the phone call consisted of, I heard you talking with a gentleman before, I know you have two daughters, and they go to such and such a school. Would you consider that a threat? If the facts in the case were the truth.
In my case, it certainly would be.
If that phone call came to me, would you take that phone call serious?
Oh, sure. In fact, it would already have gone past the point where you should have been doing something about it.
You mean if you were me, you would not be sitting here, you would be with your family?
You have been classified as an active enemy of the church. There are passive and active enemies, and this is part of the geo-intelligence training. And I've done their intelligence PR course. I've been trained how to handle you guys if I wanted to, if you were attacking me. In other words, I've been trained to present the church's position in a favorable manner. I've been trained to take everything that you say and turn it around against you if that's what I needed to do. In your particular case, they would have already classified you as an active enemy. You would have done something that impeded the expansion, the progress of Scientology, and you would have gone from somebody who was just in disagreement with the church or was interested in finding out what was all right about into somebody who was doing something about it. The minute you became active, then you go under the area of observance of geo-intelligence. That's when they start gathering the data, when you become active. I didn't get sued until I testified. As long as I hid for 3 years after I got out, and the IRS didn't know where I was, and nobody else, nobody bothered me. But the IRS found me, and I agreed to work with them. And as soon as I did, the day after I put my testimony in the record, it hadn't even been released yet.
Well, Mr. Burfield,
he arrived on my doorstep.
Concerned about some threats he has had. I have, unfortunately, no longer live with my family, but I'm concerned that too, and that's why I'm asking you, as a person who has done these things, how may we expect to be handled?
Well, a friend of mine's daughter a week ago turned her in to the Church of Scientology for dealing with me and a bunch of other Scientologists who had gotten together outside of the authority of the church to discuss the things that they didn't like that were going on in the church. Her daughter is a Sea Org member and went straight into the church and turned her in for the activities, and they pulled her in and grilled her. In fact, she has a lot of money still with the church, so they sent a couple of registrars along with to try to get her to go back in here to Clearwater and get her quote-unquote case handled so that she would be no longer in disagreement with the church. That's a standard qualifications action. There's a qual division. Anybody that becomes disaffected with the church, their confessional holders are immediately gone through, and you attempt to get them back into session, being audited, and get them back in alignment.
The standard procedure then would be, before to stop these hearings, would have been to find skeletons in the closets of the five commissioners or possibly the attorney and the manager. Would that be the normal way of, stop these hearings before they started?
If you want to know what the Church of Scientology will do to you, read The Art of War by Lao Tzu. Because that's one of the required books on the training manual for an intelligence operative.
The whole part of all of the intelligence operations, drills and policies, as I mentioned at the beginning and a number of times, will all be put into evidence. Some already have, but there are hundreds more to put into evidence.
Well, I've learned my family just to watch themselves, and Mr. Burfield has alerted his family, and I'm sure the other commissioners have done the same, and letting them know that I know if anything does happen.
Sir, if I may, one of the points that just counselor just reminded me of that I wanted to bring up was that while I was on leave of absence from the church in Los Angeles, I was approached by a Guardian staff member. My wife at the time, Reva Bittleman, had parents that lived in Miami. Her father had been a successful supermarket owner. They were very well known and thought of in the Jewish community. We were asked if we would consider infiltrating all of the local charities as fundraisers, using the father's, you know, influence in the community to get, you know, go through the family ties, the lines, and what we were supposed to do was infiltrate the charities, do a lot of good fundraising things, bring some money in, and at the same time, you know, impress the charities with our competence and gradually gain some sort of control over them. It was decided about 3 weeks after we were approached that because we were so well known as Scientologists around the world, we had traveled extensively for 14 months to the church top management, bailing orgs out of financial trouble. So we had been approached and they decided that we were too well known, so they were going to use somebody else to do it. I'd check your local charity. You may have somebody operating in there right now. I was asked to do it.
Okay, let's get a little different little track then. If you could pass a lie detector test, you were trained to pass a lie detector test. If you're that well trained, could you then also pass an E-meter test?
Spectra.
That's the same thing.
I know that. You train people, you to lie.
Yes.
To lie so convincingly and so convincingly well that you could pass the lie detector test.
No, that they could pass the lie detector test on whether they could do it or not. Then they couldn't go out until they could. That's how well trained they were. They knew in no uncertain terms when they left that they could get through any customs officials and complete their mission. Customs officials, immigration officials, authorities, reporters, whatever. They knew their job cold. So cold that you could put them on a lie detector and they wouldn't read. When I say read, I mean the lie detector test would show that they were not lying when they said they could do it.
And how could you possibly fail the E-meter test when you were back on that leg for auditing?
Well, if you had something that you had done against the church and had never told anybody about, that would read on the lie detector. It's an area that you're not
only trusted to lie for specific reason or job or mission.
Okay, there's a difference between active use of Scientology intelligence technology and the use of the E-meter to find out whether or not a person is doing what they're supposed to be doing. In one form, you have like a security check when somebody goes into a company. Often now companies like Radio Check, Tandy Corporation now uses the lie detector test with regard to the application form that you fill out for employment. So it's in that order of magnitude. A staff member could be brought in at any time. H. Steele Hubbard Communications Office had the right to call in any staff member and put them on the meter and find out whether they had been doing their job, whether they had been using Scientology standardly or not. And if they failed, take whatever measures necessary to correct that. On the other hand, you had training somebody so well that you knew that they could do their job, and to verify that they themselves knew that, put them on a lie detector. And if they didn't feel 100% confident, it would read. I can't begin to tell you how many hours some of these people spend. I'm sure you've all heard the term tone scale, emotional tone scale. You haven't gotten into any of that. Well, basically what it is a set of techniques where you can bring somebody emotionally up or emotionally down by being able to ascertain what they're basically not confronting in life, what they're not willing to face take responsibility for. And I used to drill with flashcards with another guardian's office staff member on being able to move somebody involuntarily up and down that scale by simply spotting where they were really coming from in terms of their ability to confront life. Those drills are constantly run on Scientology people that deal on public lines. They're done on auditors, and they're done on geointelligence personnel. Only they're modified with geointelligence personnel for situations like reporter. If there's a reporter bugging you, to just, you know, take them up and take them down and just confuse the hell out of them and get them out of your hair. It's not all that hard to do. Listen, I've worked in intelligence and naval intelligence, and it's not technology that's unknown in this world. It's just modified for the use of the church. It's not something L. Ron Hubbard just dreamed up on his own. It's standard intelligence procedure. Standard brainwashing technique.
When you took money out of the country and Tony Tucker, did you take it out in cash?
The biggest incident that I know of personally was a $50,000 cash shipment that went to Flag when Alex Tversky was called to Flag in 1971. There are other people that I know of that took it back and forth, but this is a situation where I was in the office and he said, "Yeah, I'm going to bring Ron $50,000." You know, we made $500,000 that week for U.S. gross income. In fact, I don't know whether you know it or not, but when I left Scientology, the Church of Scientology in Clearwater, Florida, had a gross income of $500,000 to $700,000 a week. And I know you people didn't see any of that money.
Neither did the tax collector. How much are they skimming, do you think, in Clearwater?
Well, you know, the policy of LRH is to try to run an organization on 25% or less of the gross income. Just how successful they are now or anything, I don't know. But I know a lot of staff members that ate potatoes and beans while there was money being shipped off to the Guardian's Defense Fund to handle the mixed enemy that they had created with covert operations.
So that's that. If you make $1 million, then you would be a month, a week, you'd be spending $250,000 here, and the rest would go to L. Ron.
Well, it would be filtered probably through worldwide. When Flag was not here in Clearwater, of course, during the course of the IRS trial, there were some 30-some bank accounts in other countries where money could be sent to. That came up in the IRS trial. And at the time we did that trial last year, they still had about 20 accounts that were active, still had money in them.
Well, a previous witness has said about 10% is taken off the top.
That's just to the Guardian Defense Fund. That's to combat the kind of hearings we're having right now.
Yeah.
I will. Who gets to start off again? Mrs. Garvey?
I don't know where to start. I want to keep him.
Yeah. I have
going
to get the plane at 5:30. So that's all the time I got. I wish I could.
Let me just cover some of the things on this background or the outline that you've got. What on one item here with C-check, Operation C-check. Underneath it's got E-meter light detector.
It probably should be sec check, not C check. That's a typographical.
Oh, okay.
Security check.
Okay,
confessional.
LA officer for the security check. Then you go down, there's one under large amounts of cash out of the United States, inflating OTC expenses. What's OTC, first of all?
OTC was what Flag was outside of this country. When I first joined the C organization, I thought I was joining the Church of Scientology C organization to go through a ship's master training program. When I went into my initial training, the first thing I got was some policy letters or flag orders that told me what I had actually done was signed a contract with a corporation called Operation Transport Corporation. In the 1970s, there was another corporation which had been set up called Operation Transport Services, which was allegedly another corporation that provided management services and facilities, the leased the ship to the Sea Organization. It was all one thing. It was OTC, OTS, two organizations, all the same animals. In fact, we had to take people who were new to Scientology that were going to FLAG, and that was part of my briefing job, was to brief them on the fact that they were really OTC when they got out of this country, and there was nothing in anywhere in writing that could be used to prove otherwise. But OTC was always run by L. Ron Hubbard, and always has.
I might note for the record at this point, this particular item has legal significance for a lot of different reasons, which will become plain for a lot of different reasons at a later time. And it has personal significance to Mr. Meister, because the Church of Scientology of California, which owned all the buildings, and
the Church of Scientology of California, which is
a corporate entity which owned all of the buildings in Clearwater, Florida until last December 13th, wrote a letter to Mr. Meister involving the situation on the death of his daughter, and under their letterhead of the corporate entity, they stated that, "I am sure you understand that the ship's company, an independent Panamanian agency, is under no obligation to the Church of Scientology of California to provide information that it might deem goes beyond the scope of a reasonable inquiry by bereaved parents. The independent Panamanian agency and the ship's company is the Operation Transport Corporation, to which the witness just referred."
Well, under the next one under that is billing Church of Scientology of Clearwater. I mean, you'd bill, for the operation of OTC, you'd bill the church.
Let me explain this. Yeah, I have a letter, as a matter of fact, an OTC letterhead that introduced me as the captain on one of the vessels that was written by Lieutenant Commander Bob Young, who was the U.S. Fleet captain at the time. He was a Stewart Scientology staff member, but he was also, in terms of this letterhead, the U.S. Fleet Captain for the Board of Directors of OTC Limited Panama. I have the original with a seal, the OTC seal on it, too. What would happen is the church, every once a month, they would do what was called financial planning. At that point in time, the people that were on the flagship would requisition monies for ship's operation. All right. I don't know if any of you have the remotest idea how much it costs to keep a ship going, but it's incredibly easy to have in a ship the size of the Apollo, which had about 400 crew members on it. It was roughly around 350 feet long. You can lose $80,000 in the engine room and the spare parts bin. Really simple. Food costs. You had an organization called OTS, which we were instructed to no longer mention, which was actually part of a church who was billing for services that it then delivered to OTC, and the people who were delivering the services were Scientology staff members and Apollo crew members. I don't think I have to go any farther with showing you how easy. There is another point, though. The church uses a finance system which basically breaks down in a weekly income packet. Originally, there was supposed to be an invoice log in all church that showed when invoice packets and numbered were given to Treasury, so that the log, so people couldn't mess around with the invoices. What it basically ended up happening was the church had Scientology printers that would print up a couple of sets of invoices, and I noticed after we did a convention audit in 1970 that I was a part of, and the IRS was making an inquiry into the church finances at the time. I never saw a logbook in any organization after that point. All right? My wife's handwriting and later on in 74 was on invoices that she couldn't possibly have written. In other words, what I'm saying is these income packets can be pulled out on even a so small a thing as a weekly basis and totally altered, and there will never be a record anywhere else that says that there was any more money coming to the church. It's all on an invoice machine, and it's done deliberately.
The next question I was going again down this outline is talked about or mentioned that you replaced an enemy condition. When was that? And we've all been hearing about RPF. What was RPF's
Well, it could be, you could be assigned to it, but primarily it had to do with a lot of crimes against Scientology. And those crimes could be things like not applying a policy letter when you should have, not having a good gross income for the week, not having it go up steadily. Maybe it went down for 6 weeks or something like that. So you could be pulled off of a post and put onto the Rehabilitation Project forces. You were held up to ridicule by literally everybody in the organization. You were not allowed to be communicated to or communicated unless you were first communicated to by somebody. I spent time in a village at one time for being late from coming off of Liberty. I spent 12 hours in Joel's water that deep in the bottom of one of the ships, cleaning scum off of the hull because I was late. And I went without sleep at that particular time for about 36 hours, getting my amends to the church for my crime of not being on my post in time. I observed people in a chain locker on the ship for a week on bread and water. A lady named Holly Judd at a place called American St. Hill Organization in Los Angeles spent something like 9 or 10 days in a closed room on bread and water, writing up all of her crimes against humanity for the last trillion years, and the ethics officer would throw them back into it and say that wasn't enough.
A point of correlation in terms of corporate policy, you may correlate that testimony that you just heard to the testimony of David Ray in the dumpster with the garbage up to his chest.
Right, right. You also can testify to that some of the undercover criminal operations as breaking into offices, burglarizing, planting false information.
Well, that had
part
to
your mission.
The Bill Foster story. I mean, let's face it. I helped a man who was wanted by the federal government get out of this country, and I got him out real fast.
That's good criminal.
Okay, I don't know if statute of limitations is up or not. I'm not here to defend myself. I've done what I've done, and you can make do with whatever you want to out of it. I'm here because I know of a lot of very, very decent people who have been jacked around by this organization. Their families disrupted. I have not been able to live in one place for the last 3 years. I've had to structure my whole occupation, not around what I can do, but around what I am limited to doing in order to avoid my background with the church from being exposed to an employer. And that's commonplace. And I would like to see people, like I said, I've got the stuff I've got, nothing. There are people that I know of that have got things that would really curl your hair. And they're afraid to step out. And I hope that these hearings will... Guardian's office is a little short-staffed right now, handling all of the flaps, and hopefully all of the things that happen will make them too undermanned to resort to anything silly like, you know, physical harm to people. And the people who would like to come out, would like to resume their place in society and become productive members of a community, could come out and do it without being chastised for having made a mistake and joined the organization.
As the city's consultant and having been involved in the investigation of this organization for 3 years, I can tell you that the individuals, some of the individuals to whom Mr. Mayor refers to, or many, have contacted my office. I am under confidentiality with regard to their identity, but I can simply say, as the city consultant in my investigation efforts, not only specifically for this project, but for the last 3 years, many, many, many such individuals would like, in fact, to come out, but they're in fear.
One of the vicious policies we've heard about in the past and seems to relate to you also is the disconnect with your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Was there something about Scientology materials demanding divorce?
Well, initially when this goes back to 1969 when I was on staff in Tustin, California. I was still married at the time. I was introduced to Scientology through a friend and heard lectures and so on and so forth. Because I had had a background in public speaking in the United States Navy, for some time I taught anti-submarine warfare techniques to Annapolis cadets that would come out on the training crews. And understand, this was during the Vietnam War, and we were the flagship of the 7th Fleet. So part of my daily duties was to take a group of officers and train them on how to do various things. And I had quite a bit of experience in talking with people. As a result of that, I was offered a job in the Tustin organization to teach their communication course. and I was just told that if I was willing to come in and do it, they wouldn't charge me for the course or anything. They'd give me the training on how to do it, and I would just do it. And I, subsequent to that, became the communication course supervisor, and I gave introductory lectures to the public every Friday night for them to come in and sign up. So I was having a lot of marital problems at the time as a result of my association with Scientology, so I was asked to bring my wife in. There was an attempted handling on her. She was put on a meter and asked a bunch of questions and stuff. And after it was all said and done, she said, "I don't want any part of this." She didn't know why. She just knew that she did. I don't want to go into that any further, but as a result of that, I was considered to be what is called PTS, or a potential trouble source to the church. The policy very clearly says handle or disconnect. And I said, "Well, she's not going to become a Scientologist." "That's right. What else is there to do?" "Disconnect." So at that point in time, you have to realize I had gotten into it to the point where I actually believed that the part of my spiritual future was involved with the church. My wife was very heavily into drugs at the time, and I had just come off of them. In fact, one of the things that I had to do in order to get the job, I'm not going to try to tell you I came back from Vietnam in good shape. I didn't. And it was years before I stopped carrying a gun and knife. All right. So I had to write a letter promising that I would no longer use drugs and I was clean from it, in order to be allowed on staff. All right. So basically, my wife was just another one of you garden variety humanoids that was stocked into drugs, and I was better off for that, and I went for it. Whether that was right or wrong is beside the point. I did. And that marriage was ruined as a result of my believing the church policy on the matter, that I couldn't reconcile the marriage unless my wife was a Scientologist.
For the record, that policy is Exhibit 2.